We have an update, the first in decades, really, on the swankiest night spot in the South. During the era of segregation, the Dewdrop Inn was the cultural mecca of Black New Orleans. It closed its doors in 1972 after a 34-year run during which the Dewdrop Inn featured the greatest rhythm and blues and soul artists who ever lived. Now there's an effort to rescue and reopen the Dewdrop Inn for a new generation, NPR's John Burnett reports.
The Dewdrop Inn was one of the most famous clubs in the network of black cabarets known as the Chitlin' Circuit. It was to the city of New Orleans what the Savoy Ballroom was to Harlem. Little Richard, a frequent performer there, composed this song about the place. Located behind a modest storefront on LaSalle Street in Mid-City, the Dewdrop was actually a complex of businesses.
It was just a place where you could come, you could eat, you could listen to music.
Kenneth Jackson is current owner of the Dewdrop.
If you got too drunk, you could go and rent a room in a hotel. You could go next door and get your hair cut. My grandfather he loved to have a place where you could go to have fun.
Jackson is a big man in a sweat-soaked work shirt who's dean of students at a local high school. His grandfather was the redoubtable Frank Pena, who opened the club in 1938. The restaurant was famous for its red beans and rice cooked with pigtails. The inexpensive hotel was popular among musicians. Ray Charles crashed there back in the day. And the stage of the two-story Groove Room featured some of the greatest black American entertainers of the day, like Mabel Louise Smith, known as Big Maybelle.
Candy, why I call my sugar candy.
The Dewdrop featured drag queens, Sir Lady Java and Patsy Valadier, a tap dancer with a wooden leg named Peg Leg Bates, the ventriloquist Calhoun and his dummy Society Red, and Iron Jaw, who picked up patrons in their chairs with his teeth. Local bandleader Deacon John got his start at the Dewdrop in its heyday in the 1950s.
Well, now, baby, tell me how do you do? Ooh, Lord, baby, tell me how do you do?
Deacon John remembers the scene outside the club was just as entertaining as it was inside.
Oh, then there was the pimps and the players and the hookers and the bee drinkers. There were the card sharks and the people with the dice games. And there was just a huge assortment of musicians, you know, jazz musicians, R&B musicians, blues musicians, traveling musicians who would stop by all the time because this was the place.
The Dewdrop was popular among white patrons who knew where to find the hottest floor show in town. Pena welcomed everyone, even though Section 561(1) of the city code prohibited race mixing. It's read here by Shianta Dorsey, an archivist at the Amistad Research Center at Tulane University.
It shall be unlawful for any person to sell any of the beverages on the premises under the same roof to both whites and Negroes unless the space where said whites and Negroes are served is divided by a solid partition from floor to ceiling without any openings whatever therein.
Frank Pena did not have a solid partition to separate his patrons, and he paid the price, says grandson Kenneth Jackson.
There were instances where the police would come in and just, if they'd find white people in the place, they'd arrest everybody in here and take them downtown and charge them with racial mixing. Well, that went on until he just got tired of being harassed about it, and he ended up filing a lawsuit.
In 1964, Frank Pena sued the city of New Orleans in federal court, claiming the race-mixing ordinance was unconstitutional. Before a judge had a chance to rule on it, President Lyndon Johnson signed into law the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that ended segregation of public accommodations. White and black patrons were suddenly free to commingle in any night spot across the city. Pena's ideal of legal integration actually contributed to the Dewdrop's demise.
Black clubs and black neighborhood businesses that had live entertainment in general started losing their customers in that fashion. Once integration hit, of course, it was like, okay, the door is open, let's go try it.
Irma Thomas sang at the Dewdrop Inn in the early 60s when she was a teenager. She went on to become the soul queen of New Orleans.
It's raining.
As the Dewdrop's audiences shrank, Pena's health declined. The club closed its double metal doors the year he died in 1972. The hotel stayed open for a few long-term tenants until Hurricane Katrina hit in 2005. Flooding damaged the downstairs, and prop wash from rescue helicopters blew pieces of the building off.
Light it up and go to the same seat.
Kenneth Jackson leads the way through the historic building, which is in sad shape.
And if you go up a little further, watch your step right here. I'm going to turn some lights on for you. You're going to see another spot where the stage was.
Next month, Jackson, along with Harmony Neighborhood Development and the Milne Inspiration Center, will kick off a campaign to raise $3.5 million to reinvent the Dewdrop. They're thinking about a nightclub, hotel, restaurant that is a business, and also a training center for young people interested in the hospitality industry. And Lakedra Robertson, a community engagement consultant working with Jackson, says they hope the Dewdrop will again become a place musicians can call home.
They can come for practice. They can network with other artists. I just think it's going to be a hub and a haven for artists to find the true grit and authenticity of what real good music is.
The old building is waiting for them. The original sign still hangs above the door out front. Dewdrop Inn, hotel, lounge, and restaurant.
You know, I don't have any doubt that it'll return to its former glory. It may not be exactly the same, but people are going to be able to come here and really enjoy themselves and say that they had a good time.
And in a city that knows how to have a good time, people are watching to see if the Dewdrop Inn will swing again. John Burnett, NPR News, New Orleans.